I got it.
Yeah.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
And that's a cue for you to join the show by doing just that. 888-663-6386. Email patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. It is Wednesday, one of our favorite days, because Andrew Goss, good friend and a currency historian, a man about town, bon vivant, raconteur, guy that knows a lot about gold and silver, Federal Reserve, a lot of history. He has written two books, Secret World of Money, Uncle Sam Cooks, the books, working on a third, the monetary history of the United States, and he buys and sells gold coins for a living, just so you know. And Mr. Goss, good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Patrick.
And how are thee? What's up there in Jersey?
Full steam ahead, batting down the hatches.
Really? Really? Batting down the hatches.
Yeah.
One of your favorite guys, I don't know if he's your favorite, but I know you have a lot of respect for Jim Rogers.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy.
We got a little clip from Jim Rogers about his perspective of what he sees coming. We also have a clip from Robert Kiyosaki about his views on gold. And then we also have a clip this morning. We've got three of them. Got some sound. Legendary investor, Rao Paul, you know this guy?
Please.
Do you? Yes. Hey, what is he? Is he global macro investor?
Yeah.
But he's a pretty well-respected guy.
Very well-respected. Yeah. I know what he said a couple of days ago. And
about what?
About what we were probably going to talk about.
Bitcoin?
That's right.
Yeah, but you'll be interested to hear what he says about Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, I know what he said. I'm out.
He said that he's out. He's out.
So Goldman Sachs says it's looking a little heavy. I had talked about a couple of weeks ago the ransomware business, right? How people.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. That's one little component. Can you think of another illegal business that's having trouble with its cash?
I would suspect
the marijuana industry,
marijuana.
Yeah.
Well, more so even cocaine or
yeah, but cocaine,
heroin,
is,
right?
You know, you can't deal cocaine out in the open in Colorado, but you can sell marijuana in a storefront, right? And so the banking access at the federal level has been cut off for marijuana dealers.
Oh, wait. Is that really? Now it's legal there. But the boys who don't like
it at the federal level,
they don't like doing it because it works.
No, you're customers, so you can't knowingly take an account from a marijuana dealer.
What do you
mean?
Even
though cannabis
explain what you mean.
Okay. Even though Colorado legalized marijuana, I believe for recreational use, even, right?
Medical and recreational.
Okay,
correct.
But at the federal level,
it's
illegal. Marijuana is illegal.
Of course.
Sale, production.
It's a Schedule 2 or Schedule
1. Right,
their schedule is, yeah.
So the cryptocurrencies are stepping in to allow the stand as a middleman to between, bank-issued credit cards and...
But if Wacky Tabacky, help me out here. Uh-huh. If Wacky Tabacky...
Devil's lettuce.
I like that one. The Wacky Tabacky is legal in marijuana. So I go in and give my credit card. I can buy it. What's the point? I don't understand what you're saying.
You go in and give him your credit card. The merchant is not allowed to have a merchant account. He can't take. You see?
No, I don't see.
No. It's not coffee. He can't take your credit card.
Because?
His credit card issuer won't give him, if the credit card issuer finds out that this is being used to do marijuana, they'll close the account.
Really?
Yes, at the federal level, the federal government has prohibited the banks from allowing these customers, to use access to electronic money.
Huh.
Your choice is either cash or cryptocurrency. So it's cash or Bitcoin.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. So they do it because, of course, we know why.
But you can use your credit card to buy Bitcoin.
Yes, you can.
That's perfectly allowable. So you use your credit card, you buy a Bitcoin, then you take your Bitcoin, you buy your marijuana.
I see.
And the marijuana dealer can store these Bitcoins without any federal intervention.
Okay.
That's it in a nutshell.
But, okay, so help me out here. But didn't the feds just say they're just going to give up on, they're not going to be breaking down doors anymore like they used to do in California on the marijuana stuff?
I don't know. That Jeff Sessions guy, he seems like a pretty hardcore guy. You know,
yeah, but I mean, can't a state do what it wants?
I mean, what do you want to refight the Civil War?
What about the 10th Amendment? You know, what about the 10th Amendment?
Yeah?
Yeah.
What about it?
Okay.
Are you referring to the list of suggestions again?
Are you saying that Colorado is on the plastic too?
Yes, they are. The state of Colorado, you bet.
Oh, my goodness.
I was watching a special yesterday.
Colorado's on the plastic too and not on the organic cotton couch?
You know, the state of Colorado is definitely on plastic.
Oh, that's right. It's the state of Colorado rather than Colorado.
Colorado, yes.
Oh, yeah. Why did I forget that? Yeah, folks, if you look, I don't even know if I want to tell you this, but I'm going to go down. If you look at your thing for your mortgage, right, your mortgage papers, they'll say the state of Texas, which
and
is
in
not,
this state.
In this state, which is not Texas, right?
No.
Tell them the difference, Andrew.
Well, it's the corporate entity that is of Texas, so it's the state of Texas.
It's kind of like a cloud. It's like a cloud.
Yes, it is. It's better than my plastic. Patrick.
It's just like it's a cloud. It's a cloud thing up in the air. It's called the state of Texas.
That's right.
And it's not Texas.
That is
and
right.
And why do they do that?
So that they can create a corporate entity that doesn't have to follow the rules of common law.
Really? Those rascals. So is that why one cannot fight or property taxes? Is that the main reason?
It would depend who you're going after. Obviously, if you're going to file an appeal for the state of Texas, well, yeah, you're not going to have much success. Yeah. And, you know, recently
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
Really?
Recently, there was a case in 1967, and this was before that, you know, ultimate merger of law and equity.
Mm-hmm.
And you could look it up, Loving v. Virginia, right? And it's one of those civil rights cases which invalidate laws that prohibit interracial marriage.
Okay.
But it is Loving v. Virginia.
Loving v. Virginia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the state of Virginia.
Virginia.
And it's in the, because this is the 50th anniversary of that decision, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. I think 67. So anyway, this was a case that of organic law dealing with Virginia, the organic state, the real thing.
Not the state of Virginia.
Not the state of, but Virginia tried to say that, oh, no, this black man and this white woman or vice versa can't get married.
Okay.
Their marriage doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And it was on the organic couch that they said this, right, you know, no plastic, right on the cotton. And so the Supreme Court said, oh, yeah, well, you're out. You know, that obviously you state cannot do something like that unless they're on the plastic. Then they can do.
Unless they're the state of Virginia.
That's right. The state of Virginia can do all sorts of things.
So were these attorneys so brain dead they didn't get that?
It was too early, Patrick.
What do you mean?
It was very early in the process, you know, that.
When all this stuff started
happening. Yeah, moving into commercial code, UCC becoming the law of the land, and this was a holdover case for years.
Wow.
You know, it made its way up to the Supreme Court. It didn't start there in 1967. It ended there in 67, and so, you know, you got a bunch. So look into jurisdiction and law. You know, here in my borough of Hawthorne, the borough of Hawthorne, New Jersey, a subdivision of the state of New Jersey, which is also a subdivision of the county of Passaic.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Not even Passaic, but...
Yeah, Passaic, not the Passaic County, but the county of Passaic.
County.
And so the county of Passaic decides that we've got a park in this town that was designed by Frederick Law Olmsted, the Olmsted brothers, and built.
Yeah.
Same guys that did Central Park.
Uh-huh.
Big, beautiful Goffle Brook Park, man. It's a historical, beautiful park.
Yeah.
And... they decide that they're going to put a turf field, artificial turf, for the soccer players.
Sure.
And the council and the mayor go wild. Man, I can't believe you're going to do that.
You're not going to do plastic grass in our place.
Yeah, exactly, in our pretty park. Well, the county of had jurisdiction, and this borough of said, no, no, we don't want it. Well, guess who's got to sue the county of? And it's all a jurisdictional question. Now, the general thought would be, hey, wait a minute. This park's in Hawthorne. Hawthorne has jurisdiction. And the county of says, well, borough of is in our county. We have jurisdiction. And the state says, well, state of, you're in our state, so we have jurisdiction. This whole question of who has jurisdiction over what is the root of this entire legal issue.
Yeah.
And if they can keep the jurisdiction out of the common law or out of the Constitution, then the Constitution does not apply.
It just doesn't apply.
Yeah.
So, wow. That's why a long time ago, I took a one-year course, right, from some attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I can prove to you. By using the four organic laws, you know,
yes,
Constitution,
mm-hmm.
you know, Declaration of Independence,
Northwest Ordinance,
Articles of Confederation, I can prove to you that you do not live in the United States of America.
That's right.
Right? You live in Texas. I can prove it.
Yeah.
So I took this course, right? So, I mean, it's pretty tricky. I mean, boy, if you follow the bouncing ball of these four organic laws, but you get to the point where you really get what he's saying. So he's technically correct.
That's right.
Right. Technically, yes. On paper. But the problem is...
get into a venue where jurisdiction will be recognized.
So explain what you just said there so people know.
You know...
So people would know that they really do... They really are in the United States, even though this guy was right if they live in Nebraska.
Because there's no remedy at law. You know, you have to work your way through administrative law before you can get to real common law. So by the time a case makes it to the Supreme Court, it's had to run through the gauntlet, if you will.
But could you take, if you had the money, could you take something through there?
If you had the money.
But the Supreme Court would never rule because the whole game would be up.
Well, that, I mean...
Is that the problem? That's the problem.
Essentially the problem.
Oh, that's the problem, right, Andrew?
So this is why they dismiss or work it through at the, you know, appeals level or, you know, in the district court and try to never let it make its way to the case. So if they have someone, like on Title 26 is a perfect example. So if you look at people being convicted of failing to file an income tax return.
Right.
What you'll find is a bunch of people who have pled guilty to failing to file an income tax return. If that case were to make it all the way to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court would have to strike it down as unconstitutional. So the IRS is quick to say, oh, we've got you on this and this and this and this. Plead guilty to one count of failing to file a tax return. And then they can point to these line of cases in 26 and say, look, it's well-established case law. This person's guilty of failing to file a tax return. So just another example, the AMA,
uh-huh.
right?
Mm-hmm.
The American Medical Association works hand in hand with the FDA.
Oh, yes.
The Food and Drug Administration. And while a doctor might be doing something that's well within his purview, well within his rights, he's convicted of things like...
Because he's in the corporation.
He's in that corporation.
Oh, I see.
Seeking justice. And until he gets to a venue of ultimate jurisdiction, like the Supreme Court of the U.S., then... he or she is not really going to have a constitution to stand on.
Wow.
They have administrative law.
Why would the, let's go back to the constitution to say that somebody took it all the way up in the jurisdiction thing like the course I took.
Well, I have one. I have one.
Okay.
Here you go.
Okay.
No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin.
Let's run that one up the flagpole.
Ah!
Oh, wouldn't that be fun?
Ah!
Oh,
Yeah.
How much money would that take?
Yeah, well, it would take... untold amounts of money.
Like
they would fight it every step of the way.
A couple million dollars, probably.
Millions of dollars. Yeah.
Just to take it to the Supreme Court, right?
I encountered a very, very, very...
Let's do that someday.
Yeah, right.
Wouldn't you like to do it?
Yeah.
Would it be a trip?
Yeah, no, it's been suggested to me before, and especially when I brought up, give me a lawyer. Okay, lawyer, I hold up a silver certificate.
Yeah.
And it says right on it... This certifies that there is on deposit in the Treasury of the United States $1 in silver payable to the bearer on demand.
Mm-hmm.
silver certificate. It's dated. It's signed. This is a contract. Yes?
Yes.
It's a contract. It's a silver certificate, a warehouse receipt. But if I go to any Federal Reserve Bank, as it says right on it, and say, give me my dollar in silver.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Now, the Constitution is very specific. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin, a tender in payment of debt. So they start issuing certificates for coin, and then they eliminate the certificate altogether and move us all into commercial law and start giving us Federal Reserve notes. Now, my argument is, and I, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I have to emphasize this again, that in 1934, Franklin Roosevelt caused the corporate bankruptcy of the United States and suspended specie payment.
What does that mean?
It means specie payment means here is my silver certificate. Give me my silver dollar. Here is my $20 gold certificate. Give me my $20 gold piece.
So it's exchangeable.
Specie payment. Yes.
Specie payment.
Specie payment.
Yeah. Okay. I got a specie. I want my payment.
No, I got my payment. I want my specie.
Here's my, sorry. I got to have back.
Yeah, here's my chit, my certificate.
My certificate.
Here, I'm handing it to you. Give me my specie.
Show me the money.
And throughout monetary history in the United States, individual commercial banks have suspended specie payment. So that's what the bank run closing thing is all about, right? People show up at their local Bank of Dripping Springs.
Right.
Back when it was legal to have the Bank of Dripping Springs unaffiliated with the Federal Reserve. And say, okay, here's my Bank of Dripping Springs banknote for $1. Give me my dollar. And a solvent bank takes their silver dollar, puts it on the counter, takes their certificate, marks it off the books, destroys it, or pays it out again, whichever their charter calls for. And the system continues. But in the event that they don't have enough gold and silver coin, they suspend specie payment. The bank says, okay, effective immediately, we will no longer cash your notes for gold and silver coin. In 1934, this was ordered at the federal level. The president made that order, and for all banks in the United States, and closed them until they could prove that they can open up in a solvent manner.
Wow.
And from that time to this, this idea of no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt has been suspended, like the debt ceiling was at one point. And so as it relates to money, without this jurisdiction, state of, federal district of, Columbia, all right, without this corporate United States, there is no money, period. Just, well, forget it. Put it this way. The only money are the gold and silver coins of the Constitution, and very little, if any, survive in private hands.
Well, that's a tale you don't want to tell your kids when they're doing a lemonade stand.
Yeah.
Don't take those quarters.
Store your money in electronic form. Never mind the quarter. You know, now, you know, think of how far we've come in, just in our lifetime. So
yeah,
we went from, here's my paper money or my check, remember the bank book? Here's my bank book. Here's my bank note. Give me gold and silver coin, my specie payment.
Sure.
Whether you're paid in silver certificates or whether you were paid in silver dollars or silver coin, you could still get your silver up until 67, and you could get your gold up until 34. But now, what's your choice? A piece of paper. And as they try to remove the paper from the equation, people are accepting the notion of electronic ledger entry money, which there is absolutely... At least with paper, you had some check or balance. I used to take comfort. You can only run the printing press so fast. You can only chop down so many trees. You can only put so many zeros on a piece of paper. You remove those impediments. Those are the only checks and balances. The way our Constitution intended, you know, money couldn't be created from thin air. It could only be created through labor and through productivity, which was represented by gold and silver coin. And so inflation couldn't really be a problem. The only way it could be a problem is if Congress decided, well, a 20 to the ounce is too much for gold. We're going to make it 40 to the ounce. And they do that in public, and they tell us. And the money that we've already accepted and saved and stored and put away is unaffected.
Yeah.
You know, it's still worth what it was in terms of purchasing power. But through this sleight of hand, the electronic currency, we can create more, dilute the value of the money you hold, as well as the money you may earn in the future. And that's the ultimate power that they always wanted.
Yeah. So, Andrew Goss, if one was able to take the whole... So you went into the bank and you wanted your specie for your silver certificate, and they said no, and then you sued them, right? And then you took it, and you were able to take it all the way to Supreme Court, you know. You had to GoFundMe and raise $3 million. So, whatever. Would a Supreme Court, if they were really just, right? If they were really not political, and that's a question, right? That's a big question. But if they were, would they have to say, would they have to let the Pandora out of the box there? Would they have to?
I mean, I couldn't see any other way.
Really?
How could you?
I don't know.
How could you read that any other way? I understand that, you know, well-regulated militia and the right to bear arms can be seen one way.
Right.
It can be seen another way.
Yeah, well, we have
the right to bear arms. Yeah. That means you can wear a short-sleeved shirt.
Yeah.
And the right to a well-regulated militia. Well, that means the Army or the Air Force or the National Guard.
But haven't the boys, let's see how I can say this, have they not, since early on, created this web and this state of and all this stuff, which is all kind of legal in
yes.
a sense, right?
Lawful.
It's lawful. Oh, law, that's a good word. So it's all kind of lawful what they've done, even though it's all an illusion. So they really couldn't get in trouble so much, except that the Supreme Court could say, well, this you just got to go back to gold and silver. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean,
or at least like it was decided in the past.
The whole thing would fall down and go boom.
Certificates for gold and silver.
Certificates for gold and silver, yeah.
But the decision as the law stands right now,
yeah.
This is beautiful the way they did this, is that at law, there is no difference between a $20 gold piece and a $20 bill. They're perfectly interchangeable. And the silver certificate and the silver dollar, same thing. There's no difference between the two. So at law, and I saw this. This was proven to me. You remember when they auctioned the 1933 $20 gold piece?
Yeah, the big, really expensive one.
Yeah, $7 million.
$7 million.
Big deal. Ooh. And so I guess this was back in 96 or so.
Yeah.
And I still have a signed photo of the event with Henrietta Fore. That Gina was smart enough to gather in those days. But the treasurer of the United States, after the coin hammered for $7.5 million, she goes, wait a minute, there's one more thing I have to do.
Huh.
And she took out of her purse a $20 bill.
Wow.
And put it in place of the $20 gold piece to balance the books, and now handed the title to the $20 gold piece over to the GSA. The Government Services Administration. So they now had the power to monetize that $20 gold piece without the money going into the general treasury. All that went into the general treasury.
$20.
$20 bill. That's what went in. So it's known at their level that, you know, the monetization of instruments, be it debt or gold and silver coin, is the ultimate power. And if they would limit themselves the way our forefathers intended to only being able to turn gold and silver coin into certificates and money, then their power to do what they do, or my grandpa put it best, if these guys, meaning Congress, had to spend real money, meaning gold, the whole thing would end. Yeah. That was the ultimate check and balance that our forefathers put into the Constitution, that, you know, they had to raise revenue, they had to raise money by taxing us, by taxing the citizens, or borrowing the money and out of a fixed supply. And that decision was left to the House of Representatives, who we reelected every 2 years. And if they raised our taxes too high and spent too much, we fired them. And if they put us into debt so much that our businesses couldn't borrow money and interest rates were sky high, we'd fire them. But, man, they've come up with this beautiful system.
Oh,
the Federal Reserve stands in the middle, and they're allowed to bond our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, with a debt. Literally, our great-grandchildren will be born into economic slavery. And that is a hard pill to swallow.
Wow. And then this $3.5 trillion budget would be gone.
Yeah.
Just gone. Because you just couldn't raise that money.
Couldn't
taxes,
do it.
You know, because everybody would be broke.
No, we're running a $600 billion deficit. If the Federal Reserve Bank said we're freezing the supply of money at what it is right now, there will be no more current MZM money issued into circulation. That means all of our debt buying programs are eliminated and all of our discount window operations are closed. You have no way of turning your debt instrument into money other than selling it into the open market at whatever the open market will bear. The entire financial system would collapse. It would not last one day.
And if you took $2.5 trillion off of the budget and just gave them $1 trillion, saying we'll do it for $1 trillion.
Well, they collect that.
I mean, they could collect that from taxes.
Yep.
I mean, would it be so terrible? Would this country go into a hell in a handbasket?
Couldn't pay Social Security.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah, immediately.
Well, they stole it all, though. They
But it's already stolen. What do you want to do now?
Yeah.
You know, now it's stolen.
Yeah, now
do you want to pay it back or?
Or,
not. Yeah. If you don't want to pay it back,
and
okay, then
what does that cost them a year? It's
I guess
it's a lot, right?
It is.
It's just a bunch.
I had bunched it all together. Debt service.
Debt service, yeah.
Including Social Security, including all the money we've already borrowed, including the interest on that money and the principal payments. It came out to 77 cents of every tax dollar collected.
That's crazy.
Leaving a quarter, essentially, for everything else, our current government operations.
Hmm.
And you saw President Trump's budget, first one we've had in a while, incidentally, if it passes. I doubt it will, but we'll go to another continuing resolution as we have for decades now.
So they don't pass budgets.
They don't do budgets anymore.
Oh,
they do continuing resolutions. Yeah. Yeah, we'll just keep spending this money, and we'll just keep raising the debt ceiling, and we'll pretend to make a budget, but it's never going to pass.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happens.
Mnuchin's out there right now just lobbying, just get rid of this debt ceiling thing, because it's just...
Who needs it?
Yeah, who needs it, man?
It's a barbarous relic from the days when we used to worry about things like, hey, wait a minute, you can't spend more than you earn.
So, Andrew Goss, is this toothpaste so far out of the tube, and you study this stuff for 35, 40 years, that there's no way, you just can't get there from here to get real again. It's just going to be more fiat digital, and they're just going to keep until they run out of zeros.
With Thelma and Louise.
I mean, is there any other way? Thelma and Louise, over the cliff, boom.
Well, yeah, but you either slam on the brakes.
Yeah.
And go sliding over the cliff.
Yeah.
Or
put on the gas like they
metal,
did.
Oh, baby. Maybe we can make the other side. Who knows?
That's what they do. That's their two choices,
yeah.
Right?
And I think it's pedal to the metal. Did you catch that Zuckerberg thing?
Oh, what's... No.
I'm writing a piece on it now.
What's his latest? What's old Zuck's up to?
He's calling for, you know, like a universal minimum
income. Saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you really want to sit on the couch and... You know, laptop at Starbucks in your bun haircut and just play on the computer all day.
Just give everybody some money.
Yeah, you're going to get a check anyway. You know, you're entitled to that because you deserve a check.
Man, what's these guys thinking?
Well, they're thinking, hey, since we're printing as much money as we need anyway, why not keep the people happy? You know, if you keep them happy and you keep them content, then they're not going to complain about the state of the system. So the people from the old system, like the 80 million retired baby boomers who have a pretty hefty combined wealth in cash.
Is there 80 million of them?
80 million.
Wow.
Yeah, man, yeah. Mm-hmm. 1,700
So they're getting checks every week, every
month. Well, that's their own money.
Of course.
They've amassed this pile of capital.
Yeah, they got 401ks.
And they're going to live on it for the rest of their lives.
Right.
And that's their money.
Right.
And at this point, you've got the other 200 plus million Americans...
Just running around bumping into each other.
Right. That whole generation of entitled babies who are, you know, coming up now are looking at, wait a minute, you know, how come those people don't have to do anything? Kind of the classic battle between the old and the new. And at this time, which wouldn't it be perfect? Okay, you already have your money put aside, you 80 million people. Now we're just going to create a bunch of new money and give it to these 80 million disaffected people. And they'll be able to be calm and go about their lives without having to run to their happy place or their safe zone.
Yeah, but the problem with that is that the dollars that the 80 million are getting are going to be worth less because they're just printing
more. Everybody's dollars are going to be worth less.
Of course.
And you're able to then dilute the 80 million that actually worked for 30 or 40 years and put away and didn't no instant gratification, you know, eat peanut butter, skip the vacation, save your money, save your money. Those folks will be diluted by the 80 million people that say, hey, where's my handout? Where's my free lunch? How come I can't just relax and enjoy my life on a minimal subsistence
level? Yeah, what's
level?
Up with that?
Yeah, what is up
well,
with
that? Well, I think Zuck's planning on running in 2020, so it's going to be great, man.
It will, man.
Boy, what a trip. Can you believe Trump against Zuck?
That would be great.
Oh, my God.
I'd love that.
Okay, if you're on hold, stay there. We're going to get to you. We're going to take a quick little break here just to do a little profit center thing so we can sell a few products and make our house payment. And then back with Andrew Goss, we have some tape of sound from Mr. Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, see what he has to say about gold, and also Jimmy Rogers, and also a fellow who's got some curious things to say about Bitcoin. So you crypto guys, you're going to be taken care of. And let's do this first, one of our favorite products. Here's a little primer on colostrum.
Colostrum is this amazing food, and of course we have it in a powdered form, so it comes kind of like a dried milk, although technically colostrum is not really a dairy product. It is the sort of first food for mammals. It's made where dairy products are made in the body, or it comes from that same place, but it's not really a milk, even though it comes from udders. And of course, all mammals produce colostrum, and they produce that colostrum to feed their young mammals. Really love the idea that if we're going to have cows and we're going to milk them, that colostrum becomes the most medicinal part of that whole system. So colostrum in human bodies does a lot of different things, but its primary stuff is it keeps the immune system in shape. So when we're using colostrum, it keeps our immune system kind of like going to the gym almost, like keeps it fit so that we can fight off infection. It's one of the things it does really helps us do really well. And that's a natural, normal thing for us, but we're living in a world that really breaks our immune system down, so we need immuno allies. Probably nothing in the world supports our ability to stay antiviral the way colostrum does.
That's a lovely product. We've been taking it for years. Not that that means anything to you, but we have and love it. You can click and order colostrum, and you can order the 1 or 2 kilo containers. Get on the auto ship for the best price. And Easter Thrival link right here, oneradionetwork.com. Yeah, it's really curious. I keep thinking about colostrum, and I know Andrew has had a good experience with his tummy and colostrum, but this whole immune thing is pretty cool when you really think about it. And it makes sense because this is a 6-hour colostrum, and this is what mom uses to give the little babies the giddy up and go that they really need colostrum. You can mix this together with the One World Whey, one of the best, I think, whey protein powders ever on the market in the world. I know that's but you can build up some lean muscle, brain function, cognition. It is super high to increase glutathione levels. And you can ask Dr. Google the benefits of glutathione. It's huge, huge. You get all the amino acids, a lot of good protein. It's as unprocessed as possible. They won't let them call it raw because it is in a container. So, on paper it's not, but it's a true, cool process that really leaves as much juice and mojo and enzymes as you possibly can. It will detox heavy metals out of the body. It's a great thing. If you could get some, maybe One World Whey, chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, or unsweetened, unflavored, and colostrum into your little one's smoothie, what a good thing that would be, because that you can make it taste so yum. And boy, the kids are going to get a lot of stuff out of that. You give them one of those every day, man, you'll never go to the doctor. Well, I'm just making that up. So you got the One World Whey, you got the colostrum, both available, oneradionetwork.com. Andrew, I had this email in, and I wanted to do a little official commercial spot for you and talk about your company. So maybe we'll use this and see what you say, okay?
Go for it.
This is an email this morning. Andy, I'm a SDL customer who's buying sets of coins. Are my coins not worth much unless they are sold as a set? I'm concerned because it could take me quite a while to acquire the whole set. Would your company be around 30 years from now to buy them back if you buy individual coins back or the whole set?
Okay, so no, you don't have to have a whole set in order to... No. In fact, the components of the set, other people who are trying to... This is the collector mentality. and try to get one of every type or one of every year or, you know, et cetera.
Right.
Sets are what the collectors do.
Like, what would and, be, give us an idea quickly what a set
well,
is.
Well, there's a 50-piece set of silver half dollars.
Oh, yeah, right.
Minted between 1892 and 1954.
Of every state, right?
Do you have to buy the whole set?
No.
Would it be nice? Sure. Might it be worth more as a set? Yeah. I mean, I've paid premiums of 10 to 15% for an entire set of something.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have to go out and buy the component parts myself. Here was one already put together.
Mm-hmm.
And for a customer who's looking to put together multiple sets, to be able to offer them a full set intact, already made, yeah, I'll pay a premium. Most collectors will. Most dealers will. Unless they're just trying to get them for the cheapest possible price.
Right.
So...
But you don't have to.
No, absolutely not. You know, if you just buy one component of the set, somebody's going to need that one component. And following this logic, there are these things in every set called key coins. And I have investors/collectors who use the opposite strategy. They don't buy the whole set. They just buy the keys. They just buy the ones that everybody needs. So in that 50-piece set, the Hawaiian or the Grant with Star, or, you know, a handful of others that are the hardest ones to get. And they just buy those. They don't even bother to buy the other ones.
Uh-huh.
So there are different investment strategies, but typically speaking, what a collector will do is try to get one of every component of the set.
So, and on the buying back, so that leads me to a question.
Oh, as, yeah, will I be here in 30 years
yeah.
to buy back? You know, I'm like you. I hope I'll be here, but, you know, I've been here a long time already. But I will note that I'm the third president of SDL. I'm the third president of SDL. And is there a talent on the bench right now that could take the seat from me? Yeah, absolutely.
But why would your, and you always, let's see, you often are always, you use the term, you often buy coins back that somebody, you sold them a coin 5 years ago.
Correct.
Why do you do that? It's worth more now.
Exactly.
Why do you
why
do
I do it?
Yeah.
Because they don't make them anymore, Patrick.
Oh, so you get them then resell them again.
It's the only way that I can sell a coin is I have to first buy it from somebody who's already bought it. Well, I had an investor/collector put together a set of pre-Civil War gold. When I say a set,
wow,
it was a type set. So what he wanted was one of every denomination from every mint.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. This is a doable thing. It took him, let's see, 86, 96, 2006, 2016, 31 years to
wow.
do it. Took him 31 years. But when I saw this assemblage all at once, man, I had no choice but to break out the checkbook. I had to have it, and I had to buy it because each of them would have been perfect for any one of my newer clients who, you know, maybe they're thinking 30 years from now, what's their money going to be worth? And will they have anything that is aside from typical financial instruments? And that's generally my customer, Patrick. You realize that.
Yeah, I understand.
It's the guy who has, or gal, who has stocks and bonds and money in the bank and real estate and every other asset class you can name. And diversification is the key to success in any great portfolio. I talked about the Rothschilds' fortune, how they did a third in treasuries, a third in gold and silver, and a third in equities and stocks. And that was their, you know, their pattern. They've kept it for hundreds of years. So it is, in fact, a great asset class. No, you don't have to buy every coin. The only guy that ever did that was Louis Eliasberg, the famous Baltimore beer magnate. And he ended up, with a single example of every single coin struck by the U.S. Mint. There's quite a set, let me tell you. So you don't have to be that. You can buy one or two key coins and buy one or two a year, or buy one or two every 10 years, you know, depending on the level of your portfolio.
Uh-huh.
So don't feel like you have to buy the whole set. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense to buy any at all.
Your company's SDL. You're in Hawthorne and also Hilton Head. And your phone number up there?
800-468-2646. And yeah, before you do anything, don't buy anyone's hype where you got to do this today or, you know, the world's ending tomorrow.
You got to do
this. Get an education and learn how the market works before you commit your hard-earned cash.
Okay.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network. Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Okay, here we are. It is June 14th. Have a lot of fun every Wednesday with Andrew Goss. Big juggernaut Andrew Goss. I think the healthcare system, this sick care that they call healthcare, I think it's in the $3 trillion, isn't it, in that neighborhood?
Yeah.
$3 trillion or so. So as you alluded to before with the FDA and the, it doesn't look like, you know, anything's going to happen anytime soon. I wonder, there must be a lot of pushback on President Trump's new version of health care, because you told us that the farms, the big boys, the pharmaceuticals, they were in on writing Obamacare, right?
Yes,
I mean, they
course.
Were in on it. So you think they're in on this one, Mr. Trump's plan? Do we have any way of knowing? I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe we'll never know.
Yeah.
But odds are very good that they are.
Yeah, that they're in on the deal. Yeah. Okay.
Hey, you know, we were talking about that silver certificate argument, right?
Correct.
And so the only thing that made it to the Supreme Court was a question, and they pick and choose, right, which case they want to bring to the before the court, was one brought in 1935, Perry versus the United States. This guy had bought a Liberty bond in 1918, and now it's 1935, and it's payable. And they've changed the standard dollar, right? They changed it from, they almost cut it in half. It was $20 to the ounce prior, and then it became $35 when President Roosevelt reopened the gold window. So they almost cut it in half. So this guy's bond came due, and they go to pay him the 10 grand that he put up in 1918. He's like, wait a minute, that's not the money I gave you. The money I gave you was worth twice as much. So anyway, he sues. And he sues, and he sues, and he sues, and he sues, and it makes it all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court takes this case because there's a clause in the bond that says is that the principal is payable in United States gold coin of the present standard of value, and that he wasn't allowed to receive any more. So they made the ruling that, nope, paying him with current money is perfectly legal, and that is what has stood as law ever since.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't let a simple silver certificate case make it to court. This was a bond that was payable in old money, and now they're paying in new money, which was worth half as much. And that's the law, Perry versus United States, that the regulators hang their hat on and say, oh, no, whatever the United States says is money, and any contract that you've made that requires payment at an old value is now subject to this lower standard of value at payment time.
You think that's that twirling sound of Thomas Jefferson, his body's twirling in his grave, it happens every time you even mention cryptocurrency.
That's right. Probably, yeah.
Tom, what's going on?
Yes.
Well, Goldman Sachs has started to talk about Bitcoin, which is curious.
Mm-hmm.
In a recent report, Goldman Sachs said they're very wary of near-term top of 3,134. Consider reestablishing bullish exposure between 2300 no lower than 1915. If Goldman is bearish on Bitcoin, probably means it's going to go up. So, you know, you can take that from, you know. So I'm wondering why they are the, you know, the quintessential. What's that word?
Yes.
Whatever.
Yeah.
They are the boys, the Goldman Sachs. Why they would even talk about it? If I were them, I wouldn't even talk. What is it?
Quintessential.
Quintessential. Boys, why would they even talk about it? Doesn't it just give it more credibility?
There's a tremendous opportunity to be made, whether it's rising or falling.
Yeah, of course.
So it's up by 200%.
I know.
So far this year,
it's just nuts. Okay, I want to do now. You can stop me somewhere along if you want to comment on this. Okay.
Okay.
Because this is kind of interesting. This is pretty cool. I've heard him before. I think he's a smart guy. His name is Raoul Paul. Forget the name of his company, but he's been around a bunch. But here's the thing on. He's talking about
explosion
Bitcoin.
Explosion in the value of cryptocurrencies, especially here over the last 6 months.
But you can stop
Bitcoin
if you want.
Has gone through the roof. Why? What's happening?
Well, the explosion is really, I think, just
a mania
as it's catching on, and people are looking for a rate of return. Now, interestingly, from what I see, most of the Bitcoin investors are guys who are kind of marginalized. They were the kind of geeky guys. It's their thing,
mm-hmm.
and they own it, and they love it, and they worship Bitcoin. and it's just getting acceptance. As the price goes up, things get acceptance. So, you know, I think it's in the kind of bubble phase, and it goes through this periodically, you know. It rises up several 100%, it collapses, it goes up again, and I think, you know, we're just in that phase now. This is the most exponential move we've seen almost right now. I don't know how far it goes, but I sold out last week.
You did? Okay, I want to touch
on
that.
And I've been in from 200, and I sold out about 2,000.
Wow, 10 times your money.
Yeah.
Yeah, fantastic investment. Yeah, okay, so you just said that you think it's a mania. So that means it's going to blow up eventually one day.
Anything that moves exponentially always does.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's an order of growth which would be normal, and Bitcoin tends to do this. Okay. Mm-hmm. So its volatility is extremely high.
Right.
But I think there's several issues.
Andrew, is that true? Let me stop for a second. Is that true that anything that goes up exponentially eventually crashes?
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, it is. Uh-huh.
So that's why a couple years ago, when gold went to what?
1900.
1900 in what, 3 months or something?
Something like that.
Yeah. You were concerned about that.
Absolutely.
You said, yeah. I hope this doesn't stop. Right?
Yeah, I think the question was, I've heard gold's going to be 2500
right,
by the
right.
end of
yeah.
the year.
People were calling you. Right?
Yeah, and gold, it was 1900. And what do I think? Gold's going to hit 2500 by the end of the year. And I said, if it hits 2,500 by the end of the year, I'm selling. Yes, because that would be the type of bubble
that Paul is talking about.
It's not real. Yeah.
Yeah, but so what do you think? Because you've been in this a long time.
Not without the correlating fundamentals, I should say. Right. Got to have the correlating fundamentals.
But Paul is talking about the mania. What is it you think in human nature, and you've been at this a long time, that people want to buy stuff like Bitcoin or even gold? No, when it's just going up.
Yes,
they want to buy it when it's going up. Is that human nature, kind of a weird mind trip?
So I got that same question from a potential investor who said to me, well, you know, let's suppose I buy this coin for $1,000 and 10, 20 years from now it's $10,000 and it's at the peak. Why the hell would you want to buy it at the peak?
I know, I'm sure you get that question asked.
And I told him, I said, listen, you wouldn't believe this, but when that coin is $1,000, I have to scream at people to buy it. When it hits $10,000, people are screaming at me that they want to buy one.
See, that's just nuts.
I don't know. I cannot explain it.
Just
I read the book early in my career called Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds and the Reason People Do Things. And so, you know, take Bitcoin as a perfect example. So someone will hear about this, and they'll hear it on the nightly news, and they'll hear it on Goldman Sachs, and they'll hear a friend of a friend of a friend made 10 times his money in Bitcoin. And so they rush, how do I buy Bitcoin? Where do I buy it? How do I buy it? What do you know about it? Nothing. I just need to buy it because
I always want some.
I heard. So when you drill down into, well, the fundamentals of a monetary unit, you need to walk into the store and say, I want to buy a dozen coconuts. Would you like to pay in Bitcoin or cash? You know, we have a price in Bitcoin. It costs you 0.731 Bitcoin, or you can buy in dollars, and that's $1,700. Or you could buy in yen, or you could buy in euro. So you get the point that Bitcoin might be quoted in dollars, but it's in fact its own unit of account, its own currency unit. And even if you take the pot example, so the people walk into the pot store, they can't buy pot with their credit card.
Because of the government.
Because of the government.
The government
right?
thing, yeah.
Yeah. So they can buy Bitcoin with their
credit card. They can use Bitcoin for the marijuana.
Yeah. So,
the
but they buy marijuana. They buy Bitcoin with their credit card, and then they use the Bitcoin to pay for the marijuana.
Right.
Right. So that's the reason that the people want the Bitcoin in the first place. They're not. Put it that way. Put it this way. That is the ultimate demand-driven market currency. So now people start demanding Bitcoin so that they can buy things with it, priced in Bitcoin. For the present, marijuana is the only thing. There's really very other than
there's ransom, a few other little things.
Yeah, handful. It's not a demand-driven.
You can buy a Tesla.
Yeah, does Tesla sell
stock?
Yeah,
he does. No, you can buy Tesla with Bitcoins.
He doesn't price it. stocks are not priced in Bitcoins.
No, no,
never.
No, oh, it may, you can buy.
You
one
have
of his
to
coins.
Make a conversion.
You can buy one.
You
of
have
his,
to buy the coin, convert it into dollars, and then buy the whatever it is you. Let's, so it is that conversion process that makes for the ups and downs. The only way, to my mind, that Bitcoin would be a sound technology is if there were a central bank.
Okay,
but that is the one element that the geeks
We're going to get
want.
To that. So let's continue with Paul on Bitcoin and stop me if you want.
Views with Bitcoin that I'm less comfortable with from when I first became a Bitcoin evangelist several years ago is one, it's it was supposed to be the store of value, that you couldn't mess with this formula, right?
Right, right.
And now suddenly they're talking about hard forks, changing it. And I'm like, even if they don't, the fact that they could, so what does it mean in the future? Suddenly when we get to 21 million Bitcoins, they go, no, we're only joking, we're going to print another 21 million.
Right.
You know, that is that's enough for me to say it's not a store of value for me. You know,
stop.
And I'm ignoring the
development.
Now, that's a central bank idea, right?
Well, no.
No,
that's
it's not.
That's more than a central bank.
So what about his point there? They say, no, wait a minute. No, we're going to do another 21 million.
Well, that's right. Yeah, because it is a fact of life, and we've talked about it, that Bitcoins will hit its maximum ceiling at 21 million. I had this discussion with J.B. Sleer of Fort Wealth Trading.
Yeah, he told me he called you.
The idea of a finite cryptocurrency versus an infinite cryptocurrency. So curiously, number two on the list, Ethereum. And
yeah,
I think there's one or two others.
Yeah.
Right, so some of them are fixed, and
but so
you know,
is Bitcoin theoretically. But his point is well taken.
That they're not going to. They're not.
Well,
gonna,
they don't have
can't.
To.
They can't.
No, but they don't. Why can't they?
Well, if it stays crypto and you just start running zeros backwards, I get the suggestion.
Well, I mean,
that
it,
instead
it
of
be
running
be
the zeros
more, right?
forward, you run them backward,
it would be
and
worth
you
more.
Allow the currency to rise in value. Now, what's going to happen in that environment, right? So I've, in basic economic terms,
right.
If you are drawing demand for a currency through its use in commerce, then mild inflation throughout the life of the currency gives it a pull. So there's no reason to save your money because it kind of loses a little value every year, right?
Sure.
So if you spend your money or invest it, you'll buy something that rises in value every year as the currency deflates. That's inflates. That's incidentally the basic premise of buying gold and silver coins as a tangible investment. So that is the way that any successful fractional reserve model works, through the demand pull of a depreciating currency. If you have an appreciating currency, so if you have the reverse, where you have a fixed supply of currency and you run the zeros backwards from the decimal, right? So instead of, you know, one Bitcoin, it's 0.01 and 0.001 and 0.0001,
right? Just the opposite of fiat currency.
Of
right?
putting the zeros to the right.
Like Zimbabwe, right?
Right.
Yeah.
You put them to the left.
You put them to the left. All right.
Essentially, So if you do that, then let me ask you, if you get a piece of currency, what are you going to do with it?
What am I going to do with
it? Are you going to spend it?
No, I would keep it and I'll hope it goes up in value.
It will go up in value. That's the point. It will appreciate in value.
Well, then why would it be a terrible investment?
You're missing the point.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, what's the point?
There would be no money. Who the hell would spend it? The economy would come grinding to a halt. The trick would be to get your hands on the Bitcoin
you
money.
Mean if you did it for dollars, you mean?
Yeah. Well, no, you just save the Bitcoin, because why are you saving your money? Remember those three rules with the dollar, right? Save your money, live debt-free, pay your debts off early. Why? Because every year your money is worth more as we're inflating away the substantive value of the dollar. Every year your money would, well, in this case, be worth less. But when we had gold money, silver money, solid money, then it made sense to save your money, live debt free, pay your debts off as early as you can.
Well, then take it back to the other end of the deal. If you just use gold and silver as payment of debt, like the Constitution says, you would have to keep digging for gold because you wouldn't have enough money to use.
Yeah, we do that anyway. No, what develops is a secondary market where people will start borrowing Bitcoins and paying rates of interest that exceed what you would get if you were just holding the Bitcoin.
Or you would create a certificate for maybe a hundredth of an ounce of gold or something.
Yes.
So then all that stuff starts,
Back to Raul.
Back to Raul. Okay, this is Raul Paul. Okay, stop me if you want.
Volatility in it as well.
Sure.
The other thing is what happened in India. They introduced a frictionless payment system that everybody in Bitcoin was working on. This was the great, Western Union, SWIFT's payment system. We're going to do it on Bitcoin. Well, India went and did it for 1.1 billion people, did it 50 times faster than Bitcoin, and it's rolled out and working now.
Right.
Okay, so what's the point? So, yeah, maybe Bitcoin, blockchain is more secure, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, India's done it on a much larger scale than Bitcoin has. So that makes me think, not that interested. Also, if I look at the developments in blockchain, companies have basically decided they don't want to use Bitcoin because it's a public ledger system. What they want is their own private ledger system.
Right.
So they'll, you know, you'll get 11 insurance companies together and they'll create the, you know, insurance blockchain. Because they think it's secure enough between them, they don't need this. The Bitcoin community only thinks everybody needs to be on this public ledger. They don't realize that they're a solution looking for a problem. You know, that's not what everybody needs. The banking system, everybody else is going to do something different. So that means that there's less demand generally for token-based blockchain systems like Bitcoin.
Right.
And then finally,
I think, once
I've seen all of the...
Yeah, so this is
what's
the point, the token-based blockchain system. So a dollar-based blockchain system makes perfect sense. A rupee-based blockchain system makes
Because you can use them to buy Starbucks or whatever.
Correct.
Okay, I got you.
Correct.
Right, right.
That's what I say when I say the banks are going to hijack Bitcoin's guts. They're going to just take the technology that makes it so efficient and leave the carcass of the Bitcoin behind. Continue with Roll.
Continue.
The rollout of more and more and more blockchains and all the private ones, and the ones with the tokens attached, to me it starts to look like the broadband or cloud computing, where you have so many people competing that the value of blockchain technology goes to zero.
Right. Zero, or next to zero.
To virtually nothing.
Stop there for a minute.
Right.
Stop there. So storage costs, you know, I remember 1987 walking into a Radio Shack and saying, do you have anything bigger than a 40 megabyte hard drive? And the guy's like, what on earth could you possibly need to store?
You could do a nuclear reactor with that, dude.
Now we have these 10 gigabyte thumb drives. Okay, so the cost of that storage. I remember talking to my tech guy in the early 90s. We need to transfer large amounts of information between New Jersey and South Carolina. And tell me what is the most efficient storage method to store our data and get it to South Carolina. And you know what he said? He came back with,
what?
Put it on a car and drive it down there.
No kidding.
Yes, yes, yes. So that's how expensive storage was then. Now, of course, my goodness, you know, we have little bitty chips, solid state drives that are 100 times bigger. And so the value of each megabyte of storage is plunged to nothing. The cost of storage has plunged to nothing. He's making the analogy between that and Bitcoin.
Yeah, okay.
Continue.
So as blockchain is getting repeated and repeated and repeated, there's no value in that. Yes, each one has a different feature. You can have a different pricing model, but it becomes difficult to think that the blockchain technology has a value any longer. Now, whoever builds stuff on top of it and creates a thing, they'll make the money. But the architecture itself, like cloud computing, is basically worth nothing. So where does that leave Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies? Could Bitcoin be a store of value, as Mark Hart would say? Maybe it stands its own as a store of value.
No.
I don't know. I don't like it as a store of value for the reasons I outlined. So that's the reason I'm kind of out of it and thinking, let me just reassess here, because it's not the Bitcoin I first bought into.
Huh. Amen.
Not the Bitcoin of my father or whatever.
No. 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 Yeah, no. I must agree with Raul.
Well, well, as
he,
you know,
he looks at it from the same macro perspective I do.
Sure.
And yes, I know people are making a lot of money with Bitcoin.
And those that got in earlier, look at he got in at 200, you know. And so
way more than gold and silver coin.
So
way more.
You can't
way more. Yeah. Multiples of it.
Multiples.
Yeah. So, but as a store of value, like what I say, you know, buy yourself 100 Bitcoins, put them in a wallet, and just forget about them for 20 years. I wouldn't forget about them for 20 minutes if I was an investor in that. And there are plenty of these get-rich-quick schemes overnight. You know, somebody else telling me about a marijuana stock that's, you know, 2 cents and it might go to $2, whatever. There are a bunch of these. And then, you know, six months later, it's back to 2 cents again. The fundamentals of an investment are what attract me. And I look at gold and silver coins in the U.S., with a 200-year track record and an infrastructure that I could track back since they were coming off the press in 1795. That is the type of long-term store of value that I could put my confidence in, I could put my faith in. I don't know if Bitcoin will be here tomorrow. I don't know if Ethereum will take over or JB. I mean, listen, if you have an interest in this stuff, you call JB Slayer at Fort Wealth.
He knows a lot about it.
A knowledge font.
Yeah,
and, you know, he'll explain it to you. There are other options besides Bitcoin's units of account. Ethereum, we mentioned. There's a third one that JB likes a lot, but I'll leave it to JB to explain to you. And, you know, for me, as I've always said about a Bitcoin, look, put one in my hand and I'll consider it. But until I can put one in my hand, don't talk to me about an electronic representation of wealth, because I have no faith in it, which is what led me to coins in the first place. I had no faith in electronic dollars. Now you want me to have faith in electronic Bitcoin? I don't think so. Call me a Luddite. I don't care.
Call me a Luddite.